95% of your ideal customers, like the absolute perfect accounts for your business, they do not care about your sales pitch today.
No, they really don't.
Out of 100 hand-picked target accounts, 95 of them are not actively looking for a solution, they aren't comparing vendors, and they are definitely not ready to buy.
Right. It's a tough pill to swallow.
It is. And, you know, just let that sink in for a moment. Yet the vast majority of B2B companies out there base their entire survival, I mean, they just blow their whole marketing budget fighting to the death over that tiny, bleeding 5% sliver of the market, the ones who happen to be holding their wallets open right this second.
It's a total bloodbath.
A complete bloodbath.
And it's a bloodbath that is just completely unsustainable. Companies are treating the market like a vending machine, you know, assuming there's just an endless supply of immediate buyers waiting to be tapped.
Put a dollar in, get a lead out.
Exactly. When the reality is, the machine is nearly empty.
And that brings us to the core of today's deep dive. We are tearing into a really comprehensive marketing strategy guide from Scopic Studios. It's titled Balancing Lead and Demand Generation for Strategic Growth.
It's a fantastic framework.
It really is. So our mission for you today is to completely dismantle this incredibly common, honestly highly toxic myth that lead generation and demand generation are somehow these opposing forces fighting for the same budget.
Yeah, that's a huge trap.
Right. Instead, we're going to arm you with a customized stage-by-stage playbook for actual sustainable growth.
Which is critical. Because honestly, treating these two motions as an either-or scenario, it's the single biggest point of failure in modern go-to-market strategies.
Yeah.
Picking a side is just a massive trap.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because to understand why fighting exclusively over that 5% is a fast track to irrelevance, we first need to define the weapons we're actually taking into the field.
Right. Let's strip away the jargon.
Yeah, we hear these terms thrown around constantly on LinkedIn in strategy meetings. But in the context of this framework, what is the fundamental mechanical difference between lead gen and demand gen?
Well, the defining difference really comes down to intent. Lead generation is entirely about capturing demand that already exists in the market.
Okay.
So this operates in the middle of the funnel. You're searching for that 5% of people who already have buying intent. They know they have a problem, and they're actively looking for a solution.
So what does that look like practically?
The tools deployed here are designed to convert that existing interest into an identifiable prospect. So we're talking about paid search for highly specific, high-intent keywords, direct outbound messaging, and of course, content that's gated behind contact forms.
Basically, you're throwing a net where you already know the fish are swimming.
Precisely. Demand generation, on the other hand, operates way at the top of the funnel. This is about creating demand where absolutely none existed before.
Creating it out of thin air.
Essentially, yeah.
Nice.
You're targeting that massive 95% of the market who, frankly, don't even realize they have a problem worth solving yet. The focus is purely on building awareness, credibility, and trust.
So no contact forms here.
Zero. The vehicles for this are thought leadership, podcasts like this one, organic social media and PR. And like you just said, the crucial mechanism here is zero friction.
Right.
There are no forms, no email gates. You are not asking for a meeting. You're just freely distributing value to build an affinity that will eventually convert into intent down the line.
You know, I was visualizing this while we were analyzing the source material, and it made me think of a very specific analogy. Let's see if this tracks with the framework for you.
Let's hear it.
Focusing purely on lead generation is essentially like running around a massive apple orchard with a wooden basket, frantically trying to catch apples the exact second they fall from the branches.
Oh, I like that.
Right. It's a necessary function. I mean, you need to catch apples to survive, but you are constantly throwing elbows and bumping into every other competitor who is standing under the exact same tree with their own baskets.
That is a brilliant way to visualize the chaos of the 5% market. It really is.
Yeah.
So how does demand generation fit into that orchard?
So demand generation is stepping away from the falling apples entirely. It's watering the soil, pruning the branches, and planting entirely new rows of trees so that, say, 6 to 12 months down the line, you have a private section of the orchard that is dropping massive, ripe apples exclusively into your basket.
Because you cultivated the tree.
Exactly. You aren't fighting anyone.
That captures the dynamic perfectly. And, you know, if we carry that analogy forward, it highlights exactly why relying on just one of these strategies is a catastrophic failure.
How so?
Well, think about it. If you only do lead generation, if you just run around with your basket, you will eventually exhaust the naturally falling
The
apples.
easy ones are gone.
Right. And as you fight harder for that shrinking 5%, your customer acquisition costs will inevitably skyrocket quarter over quarter until the whole business model just breaks.
Because you have to spend more and more money just to push the other guys out of the way.
Right. But consider the flip side. If you only do demand generation, if you just spend all your time watering trees and building a beautiful brand, you might create the most well-respected podcast in your industry.
Which sounds great on paper.
It does. But if you haven't built the capture infrastructure beneath it, if you have no lead generation mechanics ready when those buyers finally realize they need software, what happens?
They go somewhere else.
Exactly. You end up doing all the heavy lifting to educate the market, only to hand perfectly warmed up prospects directly to your competitors the minute they actually search for a solution.
Oh, wow. So you watered the tree, but your competitor was standing there with a basket when the apple fell.
Yeah, and that is a brutal realization for a lot of founders.
I bet. So if balancing both the watering and the catching is so obviously the right answer, why do so many incredible, smart, you know, well-funded companies get this completely backwards?
It really comes down to the data.
Okay.
The framework suggests the real culprit is what companies see on their data dashboards.
Mm-hmm.
Or, more accurately, the massive blind spot in those dashboards.
Right, the things they literally can't track.
Exactly. What's fascinating here is this concept of dark social.
Dark social. Paint a picture of that for us. What does that actually look like in practice?
So in modern B2B purchasing, the reality is that the most critical, high-leverage buying conversations, they're happening in digital spaces where standard attribution software is entirely blind.
So it's not happening on the website?
No, not at all. Imagine a director of IT who realizes they need a new cybersecurity vendor. They don't go click on a Google ad.
Right, nobody does that.
They open a private Slack community of other IT executives and ask, hey, who are you guys using for endpoint security?
Oh, yeah, I see that all the time.
Right. They get a recommendation, they go directly to that vendor's website, and they book a demo.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe the conversation happens in a direct message on LinkedIn or on a private Zoom call between peers or even just in a text thread.
And HubSpot can't see any of that.
Your marketing automation software, your HubSpot or Salesforce dashboard, cannot see any of that. It only sees that the buyer eventually typed your website into their browser.
So it just tags it as direct traffic.
Exactly. The software inaccurately tags that massive deal as direct traffic or organic search.
Man, I have to push back here on behalf of the listener, though, because this is where the theory kind of hits a brick wall in the real world.
Okay, let's hear it.
Let's say I'm a marketing director, right? I'm sitting in a boardroom across from a deeply numbers-driven CFO, and they treat marketing like a vending machine. I put a dollar in. I want to see exactly $3 come out on my spreadsheet by Friday.
A very common scenario.
Very common. If I tell them, hey, we need to invest our budget into podcasts and dark social communities where I literally cannot track the immediate ROI, I'm getting laughed out of the room. How do I justify not killing the podcast?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, that CFO is fundamentally misunderstanding how modern purchasing works.
How so?
Measuring demand generation with lead generation metrics is a fatal flaw. If you judge a podcast, which is a demand creation tool, by the number of direct trackable leads it generates by Friday, you are using the wrong ruler to measure the room.
You're trying to weigh something with a tape measure.
Exactly. You will kill the initiative before it ever has a chance to compound.
But how do you measure it then? How do you actually prove to that CFO that the podcast is driving revenue if the software can't see it?
Well, the framework explicitly outlines leading indicators you have to use instead. First, track your branded search volume.
Okay, so people Googling your specific name.
Right. Are more people organically typing your company's name into Google over a 6-month period? Because if they are, that means your brand awareness is growing. You can also look at direct traffic. But the ultimate weapon to illuminate dark social is self-reported attribution.
Which is remarkably simple in practice, right?
It is shockingly simple, yet most companies just refuse to do it.
Why? It's just a form field.
I think they just trust the software too much.
Yeah.
But all you do is add a required free text field to your book a demo form that asks, how did you hear about us?
And it has to be free text, right?
Yes. You don't give them a drop-down menu of choices. You make them type it out. Because your software might claim they came from a Google ad, but the buyer will physically type in, I was in a private Slack group, and Sarah recommended your podcast. I listened to 3 episodes and realized we need your platform.
Wow.
That single field proves the ROI of your entire demand generation engine.
That is a massive paradigm shift. You basically have to stop relying purely on what the software can track and start relying on what the customer actually tells you. So having established that, we move into the actual execution. Because the secret isn't just knowing that you need both lead and demand gen. The true strategic advantage is knowing when to pull which lever.
Timing is everything.
Yeah, and the framework lays out a highly specific four-stage sliding scale of growth.
This scale is the antidote to the cookie-cutter marketing playbook. It proves that the optimal ratio between capturing demand and creating demand, it's never static. It has to physically shift as your business matures.
Okay, let's walk through it. Stage one is validation. Imagine a seed stage SaaS startup, right? They just built a new inventory management tool.
Okay.
They are still trying to figure out if their ideal customer profile, their ICP, is a warehouse manager or a retail executive. The framework recommends a heavy tilt here, 85% to 90% lead generation, and only 10% to 15% demand gen. Why so aggressive on the lead gen side?
Because at stage one, your primary objective is survival. You don't need a massive brand footprint yet. You need rapid, unfiltered feedback from the market to validate your product and lock in that ICP.
You just need people to talk to you.
Exactly. You achieve that by forcing conversations today. You rely on aggressive outbound outreach, founder-led sales motions, and highly targeted direct response ads.
There is a very specific tactical warning in this section of the source material that feels kind of counterintuitive.
Oh, about SEO.
Yes, the framework states that SEO, search engine optimization, is a terrible investment during stage one. And most founders assume SEO is like the very first thing you do. Why avoid it?
Because of the mechanism of time. SEO is a long-term play. It takes 6 to 9 months to yield any meaningful organic traffic.
Which is an eternity for a startup.
It really is. If you're an early-stage startup trying to validate your product, you might need to completely pivot your target audience next month based on market feedback.
Right.
So waiting 6 months for a blog post to rank on Google, it's a luxury you cannot afford when you are burning cash. You need immediate high-friction conversations, which is why 90% of the effort goes into immediate lead generation.
Okay, so you survive validation, you lock in your ICP, you know exactly who you are selling to. That brings us to stage two, scaling. And the scale slides. Now we are at 65% to 70% lead gen and 30% to 35% demand gen.
Right. At this point, you have a repeatable sales motion. You continue scaling those lead generation tactics that prove successful in stage one, but you finally start allocating budget to plant those apple trees.
This is where you bring out the watering can.
Exactly. You launch the company newsletter, the founders begin actively posting thought leadership on LinkedIn, and now you finally start targeting a core list of, say, 5 to 10 high-priority SEO keywords. You are building the foundation that will support the next phase of growth.
Which brings us to stage three, and here's where it gets really interesting. The framework literally calls this phase the flip.
Yes, the flip.
Because this is the exact moment where previously successful companies suddenly hit a wall. The ratio completely inverts. Suddenly, you drop lead gen down to 35% to 45%, and you surge demand gen up to 55% to 65%. Why does a company have to violently flip their strategy like that?
Because if they don't, the math completely turns against them. By stage three, you have successfully captured the easy 5% of the market that had existing intent.
You've caught all the falling apples.
Right. But that pool is finite. If the marketing team just blindly continues to force lead generation tactics to hit ever-growing revenue targets, the customer acquisition costs will spiral out of control.
Because they are basically squeezing a dry sponge.
Exactly. And we need to look at the mechanical fallout of that. Because when marketing is under pressure to produce more leads from a shrinking pool of intent, they get desperate.
Oh, yeah. I've seen this happen.
They start lowering their qualification standards. They take a college intern who downloaded a free PDF report, and they pass that contact over to the sales team as a quote-unquote marketing qualified lead or an MQL.
And the sales team calls that intern, realizes they have absolutely zero buying power, and gets furious.
Completely furious. The alignment between sales and marketing completely fractures. The leads become garbage.
So how does the flip fix that?
To avoid that death spiral, you must execute the flip. You shift the majority of your capital away from capturing intent and heavily into audience building.
Okay.
You invest in original category-defining research. You launch major content initiatives. And notice how the mechanism of SEO changes here.
Oh, right.
In stage two, SEO was about capturing specific high-intent keywords. By stage three, your compounding SEO traffic shifts into a demand generation channel. The goal isn't just forcing form fills anymore. It's about blanketing the market with credibility.
You are surrounding the buyer so completely that when they finally realize they have a problem, you are the only logical choice.
Perfect.
Which seamlessly transitions us to the final summit, stage four, competitive advantage. Here, the scale is permanently tipped. 70 to 80% demand generation, and merely 20 to 30% lead generation.
When you reach this level, demand generation ceases to be a marketing tactic. It actually becomes a structural business moat.
Because nobody can catch you.
Right. The companies that successfully executed the flip in stage three now possess these massive, self-sustaining engines of brand building. They have thriving communities and owned media channels. They own the conversation.
And the lead gen part.
At this stage, lead generation practically shrinks to simply maintaining the capture infrastructure. You're just making sure the baskets are positioned perfectly beneath the massive orchard you've already built.
Man, the roadmap is incredibly logical, but, you know, a map only keeps you alive if you know where the landmines are hidden.
Very true.
So how do intelligent marketing teams take this perfectly structured framework and completely derail it? The source material details some highly specific pitfalls.
Yeah, and the most destructive trap is the irresistible urge to gate everything.
Put everything behind a form.
Right. When a marketing team is solely evaluated on how many MQLs they produce, they resort to creating massive friction for the buyer. They produce a brilliant, highly informative video or an insightful industry report, but they hide it behind a mandatory email capture form.
Which is an immediate bounce for modern buyers. I mean, we all know the playbook now. If I give you my real email address to read your white paper, I know with absolute certainty that an overly aggressive sales development rep is going to cold call my cell phone 15 minutes later.
Oh, 100%.
So I either close the tab or I give you a fake burner email, like test@test.com.
You've just described the exact friction point. The framework explicitly warns that top-of-funnel content must be frictionless and freely accessible.
Just give it away.
Yes. If you lock your best ideas behind a gate, you completely destroy the consumption and engagement required to actually build trust. You are sacrificing long-term, high-value brand affinity just to hit a meaningless quota of low-intent email addresses.
That makes total sense. Another massive pitfall that stood out to me is the danger of cutting demand generation during a slow quarter.
Oh, this happens all the time.
Right. When the macroeconomic environment gets tough or budgets get slashed, the CFO looks at the spreadsheet and says, cut the podcast, cut the organic social team. We can't track it anyway. It looks like brilliant financial discipline in the moment.
But the mechanism of that cut is a delayed reaction. It is incredibly insidious.
Right. The framework points out that you won't feel the impact tomorrow. You kind of coast on the momentum you've already built up.
Yeah, the pipeline still looks okay for a minute.
Exactly. But 6 to 9 months down the line, you suddenly experience a devastating, inexplicable pipeline drought. The 95% of the market you stopped agitating finally enters their buying cycle, and they go straight to the competitor who kept producing content.
And the worst part is, by the time you realize the mistake, it takes another 6 months to restart the engine. You can't just flip a switch and get that momentum back.
It's a massive hole to dig yourself out of.
This is exactly why choosing the right co-pilots, whether that's internal hires or external marketing agencies, is so crucial. If you're a leader preparing to evaluate a digital marketing partner, the framework provides a non-negotiable checklist to protect yourself.
Walk us through the mechanics of that checklist. What are the red flags to look for during an agency pitch?
First, if the agency does not explicitly ask you what growth stage your business is currently in before they start pitching retainers and the meeting.
Just walk out.
Honestly, yes. If they don't care whether you are in stage one validation or stage three the flip, they are just peddling a rigid cookie cutter service that will likely ruin your unit economics.
Okay, what else?
Second, they must demonstrate the ability to execute across the entire sliding scale. They cannot just be an SEO shop or a paid ads firm. They need to understand the interplay between creating and capturing demand.
And how should they be measuring success? Because if they just promise a specific number of MQLs, we know that leads to the garbage intern problem we talked about.
Exactly. A strategic partner will talk about measuring share of voice. Meaning, what percentage of the overall industry conversation is your brand dominating compared to your top three competitors?
That's a great metric.
It is. They will focus on pipeline contribution and revenue closed, not just form fills. They'll emphasize positioning and messaging long before they ever bring up tactical channels like TikTok or Google Ads. Strategy must always dictate the channel, never the other way around.
So, what does this all mean? If there is one overarching takeaway for you to pull from this Psychopic Studios framework, it's that lead generation versus demand generation is a false dichotomy.
It is not a cage match.
No. It's a highly calibrated balancing act that must shift dynamically as your company evolves. So the very next time you are sitting in a quarterly planning meeting and an executive slams their hand on the table and demands, "We need more leads."
Which will happen.
It will definitely happen. Your immediate response should be a question. Are we effectively capturing the demand that already exists? Or do we actually need to start creating it?
That is the pivotal question every leadership team needs to be asking. You have to diagnose the actual friction in your revenue engine before you can apply the correct tool.
And, you know, to wrap this up, this raises an important question that I want to leave you with, building directly on the concept of dark social and the attribution trap we unpacked earlier.
Oh, let's hear it. Consider this. If the most valuable, highest intent B2B purchasing decisions are fundamentally shifting into untrackable private channels like peer-to-peer text threads, closed Slack communities, and offline conversations, are the companies possessing the most meticulously tracked, visually perfect data dashboards actually the ones who are the most blind to how their buyers are truly making decisions?
Yeah, wow.
Does a perfect dashboard actually equal perfect ignorance?
I think anyone who has ever wrestled with attribution software knows deep down that the answer is yes.
Yeah, it's scary but true.
It is a sobering thought, but an absolutely vital one to chew on. So as you head back to your strategy meetings, keep questioning your data, keep watering your orchard, and we will catch you on the next deep dive.